We have Paul Stonehill on the line, and of course you wrote this book with Philip Mantle, The UFO USSR, and it's a kind of an interesting book in many ways other than just the subject matter itself, Paul, which would be interesting anyway. It's because all this activity has been happening down in Brazil with some disclosure over the weekend by the Brazilian Air Force, admitting that there at least were three UFO incidents in the past. And so I thought it'd be really appropriate to have you on the show. Welcome to the show, by the way.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
So Philip Mantle is quite a fellow. He's over in the UK, and I can tell by your accent you've been there.
Well, actually, I was born in Ukraine, in the Soviet Union. And my accent, I think, is more Ukrainian than any.
Yeah, I understand. I pick up a little bit British here. Maybe it's just my ears, but perhaps some British guy taught you the language. Who knows? anyway, so you're really qualified to talk about this and to write about this, the history of the UFOs and the old Soviet Empire, for lack of a better term. And welcome to the show.
Thank you. We cover the subject matter, I would say, starting back 1,000 years ago or more, going through the Tsarist Russia into the Soviet period, and some of the most interesting cases that are happening today.
So things are still happening over there as well.
Yeah, they are, and especially in light of the Chechen War, there have been quite a lot of sightings in the area. Some of them could be explained as new military craft, but some of them are quite unexplainable.
Yeah, a lot of people around the world are not, they don't think about but there's been a lot of activity going on there in Chechnya for some time. I mean, this has been going on and on and on.
Yeah, and the area itself is one of the most, highly visited areas in Russian history for UFOs. Maybe not as popular for the unidentified flying objects as, let's say, Russian-Chinese border, Russian-Persian border, Eastern Siberia. See, the UFOs, whatever they may be, are quite interested in the secret military research installations that are out of limits for a number of people. Also ecological disasters and nuclear incidents. We found out through our research such events usually attract UFOs.
Yeah, we've talked to a lot of people about UFOs being seen around Chernobyl, for instance.
Absolutely. And I think one of the UFOs actually helped diminish the extent of the explosion. UFOs have been registered, and very few people know about this, but over the Ural Mountains, over the Soviet and Russian secret installation areas, in the Altai Mountains, where there have been quite a lot of nuclear contamination.
Yeah, now, Paul, did I understand you correctly that perhaps a UFO got caught in that Chernobyl explosion?
No, actually a UFO helped put down the extent of the explosion.
I'd heard that story before. Maybe you could go into a little detail about what they did and how we found out about it.
Well, we found out in the book, we list people who had actually been on the site and who had seen what was going on and who had reported. We go into details like that. We don't want to leave anything to hearsay. I mean, there are a lot of people who don't like what's books and activities and like to shoot us down, but they can't. And what was happening in Chernobyl after Gorbachev and his people, let the incident happen and were quiet about it, UFOs had been reported in the Chernobyl area before and after the incident. And you are more interested in what happened during the incident. Well, according to the reports that we have, this happened on April 26, 1986. What's interesting is that the Soviet government was trying actually to blame UFOs for the incident.
They were.
Yeah. But there is a guy by the name of Mikhail Varitsky. He was a technician at the power station, and he lived there, you know, from the date it was built. Now, he says that on the night of this incident, he and another technician were called to the power station. They had to the, you know, nuclear station. They had to collect to find out the dosage of the radiation and also to change oxygen. When they came to the Unit 4, which was ablaze itself, where the reactor was on fire, they had no protective suits. Their faces were burning, they knew the danger of the radiation, so they stepped back. And as the car was turning around, they saw a fiery sphere in the sky. Now, the color was like the color of brass, and it moved quite slowly. Now, they note down that it was like about 8 meters in diameter. They saw two bright rays that shot down, that came from the UFO, and were directed at the reactor of Unit 4. Now, that object, the UFO, was about 300 meters away from the reactor. It stayed in the area for about 3 minutes, then the rays had disappeared and the UFO moved away slowly towards Belarus. This is the land that got most of the radiation later on. Now, you know, the guys, later on, they checked their gauges and found out that everything was working fine. But what's interesting is that when they took the first reading, when they came to the burning reactor, they found out that it was about 3,000 milliringians per hour. That's the classification they use. But after the UFO did something to the burning reactor, the readings went down tremendously. I mean, about 2,200 points. So we're looking at that the radiation level was actually put down by the UFO. And we go into details. We even give street addresses wherever possible of people who live there. But UFOs kept coming back to Chernobyl, and very few people reported. I mean, I know the country. I was born in Ukraine. I stay in touch with the ufologists, and in Russia, and in the Baltics, and so forth. But this was especially important case to me, because I lost somebody from my family in the whole incident, in the consequences of the incident. And, you know, I wanted to research it as much as possible. So I have testimonies of medical doctors, of credible witnesses. And, we have reports of UFOs that had actually came back to the area as if to check on the extent of the damage. Years after, a couple of years after too. And that's not the only case. If you look at the completely different part of the Soviet Union to the Asia, let's say, to the Soviet Asia, they have a lake, a very unusual lake formed in the mountains after an earthquake. This lake hovers over the Central Asia and Afghanistan. God forbid there is an earthquake, a dam bursts, billions of cubic tons of water will go down and destroy the countries below. And UFOs have been sighted in the area by Soviet military, by the same people who had to spy on American SDI programs. They had a special station with equipment, and they would see UFOs going in and out of that lake. So I give the name of the lake, I give all the information, dates and so forth. That's how we like to operate.
Now this lake is on the border near Afghanistan?
Not far away.
Uh-huh.
But it used to be on the Soviet side at the time. But now it's one of the new republics. The thing is, Russians still exert enough control in the area, and they don't want to lose it to anyone, and they're quite interested in what's going on. You might have heard the news that Iranians and the Russians are going to shoot down UFOs. I mean, the reports came, about 2 months ago, that Iran is concerned about UFOs over its territory, and they have made a pact with Russia to study them and to shoot them down. Well, there's nothing surprising to us about it. UFOs have been sighted over that area for hundreds of years, but our own CIA paid quite close attention to it. Philip and myself looked through the classified CIA files about reports from the area that goes back to the 1950s, 60s, and 70s, and we correlated that with the reports from military observers, Russian military observers, who would, you know, write down what's happened. And, you know, you find out information that makes you either excited or scared, you name it. There have been incidents of Soviets trying to shoot down gigantic disks, and especially cigar-shaped objects, against orders of their own commanders.
Yeah, I started to say, it seems, you know, we went through that in the United States at one time, and we kind of changed our mind pretty fast.
Same thing.
It did not seem to work very well.
You can't keep losing aircraft, you know?
Yes. So this has been happening there as well. It seems like these UFOs seem to be able to sense where the hot spots are. You mentioned Iran and Iraq and
Chinese border, Russian-Chinese border in 1970 during the, tense situation they had over an island. And I know that, well, my father used to serve in the Soviet army in the area too. And I've always wanted to learn as much as I could about distant, you know, parts of the Soviet Union.
Uh-huh.
That's where most of the things are happening.
When you did this research, and did you run across any actual contacts with extraterrestrials or something?
There have been reports. Now, what I want to stress is that I wanted to use witnesses and observers from most credible sources. I would say naval, military personnel, scientists, like astronomers, government people. I don't want to be accused of, you know, planting hoaxes. And I'm very proud of the research, and so is Philip. He's done his part. He's got good contacts in the former USSR. So, what you find out is that the military guys, especially like naval commanders and aviators, they report close contacts, they report interactions, and a lot of the stuff we don't even know about. But obviously there had to have been some contact. I know that the naval intelligence had been involved in it, and they had very secretive groups, special teams that had studied UFOs and USOs. Some of them, there have been so-called films taken. We don't have much. We know about some, about contacts. And, of course, there are reports about crashed UFOs and recovered craft. I don't believe much in such stories, because you have to compare. If a human being, if you can be an ant, you cannot shoot down a human being. I mean, this is the difference, I believe, between us and whoever is running UFOs or...
Right, right. That's a good point. Let me ask you this, Paul. What kind of cooperation do you get unofficially or officially from like the Navy in the Soviet Union or the Army? And are they pretty open, or are they just a secret? Are they secretive like they are here?
Oh, nowadays even more secretive. Here's what happened. When the Soviet Union was falling apart, a lot of information came out. And for a number of years, you know, the air of freedom was everywhere. And people would, you know, publish reports. Russian top military brass commanders would come out and talk about UFOs they had seen. They would not, venture into explanations of the nature of UFOs. But they would say, for example, in 1990, next, near Moscow, a huge disc was hovering for about 3 or 4 hours. We sent airplanes, we didn't want to shoot it down, but, you know, we have to report it. Then you had the situation of an ongoing specialized Soviet military research of they called it anomalous phenomena, and this was, you know, now we know more about this. In terms of cooperation, I have reports of the military people who were not afraid to write down what they had seen, or who had to write down, to report what these strange phenomena they had seen, because of the instructions given to them in 1980, instructions that had been in force for a dozen of years. I mean, these guys, this was their duty to report unusual aerial phenomena and whatever they could see at the bottom of the oceans. So, you have quite a lot of that stuff.
What are some of the other things that jump out at you? Some spectacular sightings or incidents?
Clouds. Unusual, strange, gigantic clouds that would come and hover over Soviet nuclear silos or military airfields. They couldn't do anything about them. They would be specialized military researchers or underground commanders.
They'd be just clouds?
Strange clouds, not just clouds. Some of the clouds would separate and unusual aircraft would come out. I don't know if it's cool to call it aircraft.
Did they have any radar readings?
1974 area of the Borisov Glebsk, that's a closed-off military area. There's an airfield, and a reading was taken by the local people. It was registered by a radar, and they sent an airplane. When it got inside the cloud, strange things started happening. It started shaking, and all of a sudden, danger signs all over. A few other things happened, so the pilots kind of shut down the engines just to get out. Now, this case was studied by the SETCA program. That's the name of that military scientific research of UFOs. They could not find explanations. Other clouds, too. Now, let's be upfront. The Soviets were running a lot of secret experiments, and some of the clouds definitely have to do with the plasma weapons and a few other things. And, they kind of admitted, later on this was happening. But they could not explain a lot of these strange things in the sky. And you can go back to 1940s and through the Soviet history. Other things happened in 1940s and so forth, but strange aerial phenomena, things in the sky, that definitely was registered back in 1940s over Soviet battlefields, when they were fighting Nazis, and through the Stalin's times and so forth.
Any evidence that the UFOs take sides in these battles?
Of course not. There would be sightings of quite large cigar-shaped or dolphin-shaped UFOs hovering at great altitudes. Of course, the Soviets would try to shoot it down because they wanted to know what was over them. They couldn't reach them, and they just couldn't understand. Nobody knew about the 1947 sighting at the time. Nobody knew what UFO is, but they were worried. Same thing with the submarine commanders. I have a lot. We have a huge chapter about the unidentifying.
Yeah, did they? I've heard reports, and I know you write about it, of these craft coming out of, the Black Sea?
Yeah, Black Sea is one of the areas.
Yeah.
There is a lot to do and study in the Black Sea, but not only that. Arctic oceans. Also, Soviet ships and submarines would see USOs in other parts of the Earth, but primarily I'm interested in the Russian areas. Oh yeah, quite many sightings, and unusual. And these guys who, the military people who would write down reports, they were quite scrupulous and detailed oriented. And you start reading information, your hair stands up.
Yeah.
It happens, and they've seen a lot, and not only in the seas or oceans, also in the lakes, as I mentioned before, Lake Sarez in Central Asia, but also Siberian lakes.
Any submarine reports of underground bases or something that's not supposed to be there?
It's not out in the open. I am sure it might exist. Mind you, most of the files, what I am saying is only based on our careful research of what's out there. It took a few years to go through the available information, but what's not available and what we hear about, that becomes very interesting. We just know about some of the strange incidents, like the Arkhangelsk dust or the Black Ball incident. A few names here.
Tell me about that incident.
Well, the Black Ball, for example, was a strange object found in Ukraine. and they believe that it has anti-gravitation center. It was taken away from, it was researched by, you know, regular scientists, and then it disappeared. The KGB got their hands on it, and it's gone. Whatever happened in Arkhangelsk, a strategic city in the northern Russia, we don't know quite enough, but we do know that the people from the Sietka program, such as Plaksin and others, had studied it, and they sent their top scientists from Siberian scientific research centers to get it. We don't know what it was. There are other areas of great interest, such as the Kola Peninsula, also in the northern Russia. Now, that's the area where you had for many years reports of UFOs, and it was of interest to Nazi Germany as well. They wanted to get their hands on it because they believed this was their ancient Atlantis-like homeland. And the Soviets were quite interested because they had been running KGB expeditions to the area since 1920s. They've discovered underground structures and cities that date back to the age of Stonehenge. There's a very interesting lake in the area that is very anomalous and contains quite a few secrets. But besides that, because of the strategic importance of the peninsula for the Soviet Union, and the tests that have been conducted, you have UFOs coming to the area time after time after time, and there are reports about the crashed UFO. We don't know what happened, but we understand something happened in early 1980s.
Oh, really? Could you tell me a little bit about it, or do you know anything about it?
We know that there might have been a recovery, but again, you know, it also could have been a secret Soviet aircraft that was tested and fell down. I'm more interested in the clouds, the strange clouds that were found, that were seen over the area.
Mm-hmm.
And you have reports, for example, we went to the KGB reports that had been released back in 1990, 124 pages. We have a chapter about this. And we go through many, you know, some of the most interesting reports. And again, you encounter clouds in the godforsaken areas of Russia where you only have military installations. Silvery, unusual, black clouds. You have reports of UFOs that emit solid rays, where airplanes would lose their wings, you know, when they would touch it. A lot, but I want to stress, we like to go into details as much as possible. We call names, we put down dates.
You know, one of the things we have been talking about here in the United States, at least some of us have, is there's a lot of people feel that there's some manipulation of the weather going on by perhaps governments. Do you think these clouds might have had something to do with that sort of experiments from Russian military?
Absolutely. That's even without a question. And we do let you know, those who give opinions, the consequences of these secret tests, we give them enough space in our book to state their views, and we call their names and so forth.
In your book, you refer to these mysterious swimmers, people that are encountering some people in the ocean, or what is that all about?
Lakes and some seas. Beings, I would say, about 3 meters, something about like 8.5-9 feet tall. They don't have any breathing apparatus.
But they're underwater.
But they're underwater, powerful, strange beings. And we have more than, I think, 3 or 4 incidents, which we name.
Yeah, well, you mentioned something about croakers. What's that?
Okay, that's something of one of the latest information we received. But it has to do with the unusual and quite large bodies that would approach Soviet submarines and emit sounds that sounded like croaking. They would study Soviet submarines and make submarine commanders very nervous. And a special research team was created and lasted for, I guess, about 15 years. we don't know what happened to it. Allegedly it was shut down, but nobody can find any files, and you don't ask Russian Navy such questions. But one of the submarine commanders was brave enough to keep on asking questions. I don't know what happened to him after 2002, but before that he was asking a lot of questions. Obviously, Russians were quite concerned about the Kokers. And we don't know if such objects come to our submarines here. I suspect they do. But you see, although the Soviet Union was a closed society, you get more information sometimes from the Soviet Union than from other areas.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, do they have a Freedom of Information Act over there or something?
Of course not. But what they have is a bureaucracy, and not a very well-run bureaucracy. And also, you can't constrain human beings. You can try to, instill socialism or communism, but you know what? People always fight. It's unnatural. And people would talk. I remember it from my childhood. People would try to break the, government chains by speaking out, by exchanging reports, by printing underground publications. The Russians were not, communist slaves. They were fighting back as much as possible. And in my country too, Ukraine. But no matter how tough the government was, always information leaked out. Some way you could find out. And you got to see some things too. Again, it was a much more closed society than, anything except China at the time. And at the same time, more people were privy to the secrets. And people despised government to the extent that they would do anything to exchange information about, what was going on. Saying, give it to the enemy. But I'm saying among ourselves, yeah.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. The interesting thing about the Soviet Union is the huge time zones. What do you got, 11 time zones or something? And all kinds of country, landscape, from Arctic steppes to mountainous to forest to even, I guess, toward the Asian area, there's a lot of desert area.
Jerry, there's so much that's not explored. Brazil is not explored to the full extent. Russia is even less so. My dad had always told me about the giant forest areas of Siberia, and I've seen a lot myself, but just a small portion of the country in comparison. You have the Gobi Desert, in Mongolia and Russian borders, with the gigantic, mysterious worms that exist there. And I'm going to publish an article about it. I know others have, but I have interesting information. You have unusual life forms. You have secrets upon secrets upon secrets. You have a secret society that loved mystery, loved to keep secrets and lock them away. But at the same time, you have unexplored areas with unusual, like I said, life forms, with secret hiding places. Whole villages were able to hide in Siberia away from the Soviet eyes for 50 years. We have reports about abominable snowman, about Yeti, and so forth. In other writings that I do, you have reports of strange ape-like creatures, and you have to take many of this with grain of salt. But at the same time, you have to pay attention when people report things time after time after time. You have the land of Yakutia, for example, up in the, bordering on the Arctic Russia and Siberia and so forth. It's a huge land, five times as big as France. We have reports, and we give locations of ancient sites where allegedly gigantic ships would break down. Reports of natives who talk about radiation-like effect on them when they would come to the areas where you have the so-called cauldrons. Things that are embedded in the permafrost. And when they try to get inside, they would lose their hair. Most of this stuff is still there. Then you have the 1908 Tunguska incident, the best known and maybe the most interesting UFO case of Russian history.
Well, tell us about that one.
In June of 1908, something huge either exploded or imploded over the taiga in eastern Siberia. But No fragments of the explosion were ever found. However, miles of the forest were destroyed. Effects of the radiation were felt, effects of this explosion were felt all over our planet. Magnetic fields were touched by it. You had tremendous changes in the atmosphere, and yet very few people knew about it. But when we started going and studying the information available, we could not believe our eyes. There were an expedition in 1908 at the very site, and they did not report anything, like nothing happened. Secret expeditions came there in 1911. Who sent them? It wasn't the Russian government. The first Soviet expedition, the very first one, came there in 1941. And then some others followed. And still, until today, people are trying to find out what happened. There are theories which were espoused by Russian scientists, knowledgeable people, that UFO, extraterrestrial craft, exploded over the taiga on a takeoff. At the same time, there are theories that maybe two objects crashed into one another over the taiga, and there was a huge explosion equal to many Hiroshimas. I mean, you get into it, and we spared no space for that chapter, because so much has been found and so little is heard about it in the West. I mean, there are people here who know and who want to find out more. But in Russia, you had somebody like Sergei Korolev, father of the Soviet space science, who was so much taken with the whole incident, and he spent his own money to send the expeditions to the site in 1958. He sent an expedition in 1949, a secret expedition. Well, secret to the Soviet population. Top military scientists had to gather whatever they could get their hands on and give him an assessment. We still don't know about the findings of this expedition.
They're still secret.
Of course. Listen, many things will remain secret in Russia. It's not the nature of the Russian government, but, you know, even today it's still very secretive.
Well, now, these expeditions before Russia officially sent somebody over there, were there any descriptions of who these people, I mean, what they were like?
Some normal people with very unusual equipment. Also, there were reports about strange life forms in the area, and we released those too.
I mean, what kind of life forms?
Well, unusual animals.
Uh-huh.
And some humanoid beings. And I don't want to go too much into this. I don't like too much hearsay. Although I say who has reported. I'm more interested in what the scientists had seen. What the scientists think.
What is the attitude of scientists in the Soviet Union about UFOs?
In the Soviet Union, it was different. Soviet Union had enough money to keep the scientists afloat and give them programs. Today's Russia is different. Unless Putin brings it to what it could be, it's in chaos. Scientists are driving cabs or are running to other countries. In the Soviet Union, it was different. They had military programs. They had, you know, a lot of the state-supported programs. All of it was state-supported. So these guys had a good life. And I got to tell you, let me give you an example. In 1989, there was a CIA team that went to Ukraine, still part of the Soviet Union, but, you know, it was a changing scenery. And a CIA operative talked to a scientist, Ukrainian scientist, who asked him, "What do you think about UFOs?" So the CIA guy, you know, says, "Why? Why do you ask?" "Because we," said the Ukrainian scientist, "believe in them, believe that they exist, and it's a very interesting issue that we love to study." Now, this, you know, this was a CIA report that was declassified, I guess, you know, a few years ago. So we don't know the name of the operative, of course, but, you know, here's a report of the CIA, who kept very close attention to whatever was happening in Russia in terms of UFO research.
Now, you know, there's a place, and I don't know anything about it, so you'll have to tell me. There's a place called Devil's Cemetery. What's that?
That's in the Far East. This is the site of the alleged fall of the Tunguska object, if anything fell down. Apparently something has. And if you come, it's a secret site. It's very hard to find. There are people who did find it. But those who went inside, did not always come out, and those who came out were not the same after that. I have to tell you that
Is this the same place that they refer to as the Mountain of the Dead?
No, the Mountain of the Dead is an area in the Urals.
Oh, okay.
Okay, and we listed, there was a very strange case in 1959 about tourists who were killed by something unknown, and the criminal police tried to find out if UFOs did it. And it was an interesting case, you know, if they died as a result of a missile test. They were running some missile tests in the area. They died a very unusual death. I mean, these guys were running away from something.
Yep.
Something was chasing them.
Paul, I didn't mean to get you off the subject on Devil's Cemetery. When they went in, they would come back out. You mean they were mad or something?
Well, biological changes, and we still don't know the effect. I mean, these people have to be studied. A group of, I know Vladivostok ufologists had gone there for years, but they were not the only ones. There were some scientists who were interested and would organize expeditions to the site. Most of them never found it. Some did. And I'm not sure that any of them want the rest of the world to know where it is, because I think they're quite scared of what they had found. And I can't believe it. You're looking at the areas of the taiga, which, you know, few people ever had seen. No matter how strong the Soviet government was, the land is so huge that no one could control it completely.
Yeah, you have lots of paranormal activities that were reported. I mean, Russia and the Soviet Union and Ukraine and all of these are old countries that go back in history a long ways. And so there's lots of legends, you know.
Well, legends and also reports. I mean, legends is one thing, you know, signs in the sky. We kind of live them too, because some people like to put down things on paper, you know. But hey, you look at reports like 1680 comet that came over some Ukrainian fortress and hung around for about a month, and Ukrainian Kazakhs were trying to shoot it down with, you know, primitive rifles. They could not, they got scared, so they wrote down reports. Or you have an espionage report from a Western spy in Tsarist Russia, who had seen a very strange object over Moscow, something that would actually recall Star Wars, like a battle in the sky, and he would write it down and send his reports to his people, you know, abroad. Now, we know where the report is kept, we translate it, and we list the number of the file in the Soviet archives, Russian archives, where, you know, it can be found. You have reports that go back to, what, I think 950, Common Era, AC, and, I mean, AD, and you see reports of Arab travelers to the ancient parts of Russia, and the aerial battles they had observed in the sky, and they wrote it down. This is quite a famous traveler, Ibn Fadlan. And, you know, the manuscript still exists.
And that happened a long time before aircraft were around.
Yeah. And other reports through the centuries in Russia. We have some reports from the Tsar secret police. And we list them too. Many of them take place in the Ural Mountains. Some, you know, in the area of where St. Petersburg is today, but also more to the west in the area called Karelia. Next to the Finnish border, quite a lot in this area, actually. And, you know, you go year after year, you know, government after government, and something has always happened that they wanted to study, or at least to report.
Well, now, the Soviet Union, back in the old communist days, I think they even, and there's rumors we did, too, with the Philadelphia experiment, but time travel was really taken seriously by...
You know, you can take it seriously, but there's so much you can do. Stalin, I understand Stalin was more interested in the travels to the moon, and he had secret programs that, again, we still know very little about. We do know that his facility, main research facility, to study such programs, or to put them in life, was located where Chernobyl is today. This, the very site, this was, he had a secret facility. And work was going on there until Germans invaded the Soviet Union, and so they had enough time to take it apart and ship it away, probably to the Ural Mountains, before in 1941. We don't know what was going on. We do know that he had at least two ministries that had dealt with space travel and research of space travel. He got his hands on some of the best German files and document storages, and he brought them to the Soviet Union. Now, what's interesting is that apparently the Soviets did not even go too much into the captured Nazi research. They had bureaucracy, they had changes of leadership. So you have Nazi archives that are lying somewhere in Moscow. And we know there are very good reports about it, very good information.
You know, our time's almost up here. We got about 4 or 5 minutes left, Paul, but...
Where my book can be purchased.
Yeah, I'd like to get into all of that.
Can I tell you now?
Yes.
The book is called UFO USSR. It's going to be available in June of 2005 from a place called www.filamentbooks.com, or you can call 888-953-2665.
Now, we have on our website that telephone number to order and also the link to that website you just mentioned. But before you get off, I want you to give it again for our radio listeners.
The telephone number is 888-953-2665, and the book is called UFO USSR.
I can't let you go without talking about the ghost trains of Eurasia. What was that about?
That has nothing to do, probably, with UFOs.
Oh, I understand that.
But it's a very strange legend that is not so much a legend as a reality, because it's a train that had disappeared in Italy and has a Russian connection to it and had been sighted in other lands, especially Ukraine, many years after. And some of the passengers that had disappeared from that train had been reported in Mexico many years ago.
Well, it's hard to get a train from there to Mexico, so...
Talk about it. I promise to talk about it if you want to.
Okay.
In another program.
Okay, we'll do that, because that sounds very interesting.
Travel through time and space.
Yeah, right. You do have something... literally, they're transported from one place to another.
And I'll give you all the details.
Okay, that sounds good. Well, we're going to call up on maybe in a month or two to bring you back and see how the book's doing. And, you've been in the United States a little while. You live there in Encino. You've been active in the television business as a consultant. How long you been over here?
I've been here since 1973, but I've traveled a lot. And when I was younger, and I've been to other countries, I've seen a lot, I've been to Africa, a few other places, and wherever you go, you can find interesting, unusual phenomena.
The reason I ask you that, and we only have a little over a minute left, Paul, but here in the United States, it seems like you have two groups of people. It's people that kind of believe in UFOs and other people who smirk about it and think it's a joke. How about in the old Soviet Union, Ukraine, Eastern Europe, Europe itself? It seems to me that they may take it a little more seriously.
They have. Nowadays, people think more about survival, but before, they actually were interested in UFOs because this was a forbidden subject, but not for the government. The government did its best to study UFOs to find out if they present any danger to the armed forces and the might of the Soviet Union.
Yeah, it's pretty common. I imagine the attitude back in those days was much like it was here. The United States had a veil of secrecy because they really didn't know. They thought it might be the Soviet Union.
What's more interesting is that American debunkers like Donald Menzel,
yes,
had no problems getting their books published in the Soviet Union. His book was published in 1961, about the same time when they kind of put down clamps on UFO research, independent research and so forth. They never liked independent research. And 1961, for some reason, was the year when they went after these independent researchers. Well, maybe because we had such a few interesting cases back in 1961. So you see how American, I don't want to say skeptics, I want to say debunkers, were used by the Soviets to basically fight against the UFO phenomenon.
Yeah, well, they basically used them this way here, too.
I'm sure.
When we talk about all these incidents, are there any records of, you know, somebody actually seeing a being or entity come out of one of these ships or something?
Something. Yeah. And we go through a lot. And one of the, there are interesting ones. One I want to mention is 1951 Mongolia. And, you know, very unusual descriptions of the craft itself and the beings that came out and others. So you will see, in our book, you will see quite a lot.
I mean, are they grays, like the little grays like we have here? Or?
There are similarities. There are some differences. And you will have to judge for yourself. There are different reports. Some come from Voronezh in 1989. Some come from other areas, before or after. There are reports of cattle mutilation from Siberia from about 1860s.
So these things have been going on for a while. That's the reason I alluded to the fact that mythology and the paranormal stories are kind of intertwined all together. Okay, it's UFO-USSR, and of course, give that number again so they can order that.
888-953-2665.